Todd from CSM Strategic to introduce our next panel. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Ben. Well, I don't think I need to do another introduction, as I've probably been most of you have been in the last session. But yeah, I'm the moderator, Chris Pollard, Director of Event Planning and Delivery at CSM Strategic. Session for the next 45 minutes is looking now at business events. So we're nicely segueing from sports to some of the arts and culture and live activities, now moving into business events. We've got another fantastic panel who are going to be covering a few different trends. We're going to cover off some of the learnings, I think, from the sports world to the business world and vice versa. So I think it's going to be interesting seeing what synergy and overlap there is between those two worlds. How cities and venues indeed attract and retain business events, particularly accepting that most people in this room have a focus more on sport. And then also we were discussing actually just in a pre-session we had with the panel about how business events have a tendency to now be starting to move to more of the emerging markets, and how possibly that's lagged behind sport events, which have been going to emerging markets for a bit longer. So hopefully we'll cover all those topics and more. But let me now just introduce the panel. First of all, we have Kate Caithness, OBE, who is president of the World Curling Federation. In fact, she was elected in 2010, which made her the first female president of an Olympic Winter Sports Federation. And she's been involved with curling since the 1980s, originally as a playing member of the Royal Caledonian Curling Club, before turning her effort to developing the sport. We then have Peter Tindemans, who is Secretary General of Euroscience. Peter also has a PhD in theoretical physics, and he is well known for contributing to science, technology, and innovation policy in the Netherlands, Europe, and indeed globally. And then we have Roberto Daneo, who's founder of WePlan and former director of the Milan Expo 2015 Bid Committee. Roberto's professional career actually started in the Milan Chamber of Commerce and then the European Commission, and he now supports regional, national, and international institutions in their efforts to bid and organise mega events, including both Olympic Games and World Expos. And then finally, we have Gerard Leeuwenberg. He's commercial director of Royal Dutch Jaarbeurs, and I'm going to leave him to pronounce that one correctly in a moment. But Gerard has worked in the international trade and exhibition industry since 1994, and he's now, as I said, got the role of chief commercial officer. Which is for Jaarbeurs, which is an exhibition venue owner and event organiser headquartered in Holland. So if I could ask the panel to take a seat, we'll move forward with some questions. Great. Well, Kate, if I could start with you. Could you let me know from the perspective of the World Curling Federation, when you're organising your annual congresses and your other business meetings, what priorities do you look for when you're going through that selection process?
Before I speak about that, I should say that you're here in Scotland, and curling, for those that don't know, is the number one winter sport in Scotland, just to keep you right on that one. I'm very happy, and also a little plug, I'm going to say this anyway, for the next 4 years, starting next November, Event Scotland, Paul and Stuart's here, a big plug, we have 4 events coming to Scotland. So, okay, I've got that in. Is that okay, Paul? Thank you. Our sport, a bit about our sport before I go on to this. You know, we are the fastest growing winter sport. We have 54 countries within our sport, and just to give you some example of what happened recently, we had our World Women's Championships in Sapporo, Japan, earlier this year. all the television that you see on all the when you watch on TV and see curling, we produce it. We are for our own World Curling Television. And we had in Sapporo for the event for the week 350 million viewers. So you can understand Asia is a huge market for our sport. What I wanted to say was about congresses, but it's a little story before we get there. We actually had at the Youth Olympic Games in Innsbruck in 2012, a chap called Brian Krolicki, who was a lieutenant governor of the state of Nevada, came to watch curling during the games. Now, they wanted to do a potential bid for the Olympic Games. So then they came to see curling, and we had a chat, and he said, yeah, they're interested in taking, because of a potential bid, they had managed to make contact with the national federations, who in turn got in touch with the international federations. So we had a chat, and we said, okay, let's go to Las Vegas. And only because of he was also bidding for the Congress. So it was a two-way stretch. So the Congress was to take place in Reno, and curling was to take place in Vegas. So off we went in 2014. Fantastic event, absolutely fantastic. And can I tell you that the economic impact was some $5.7 million from that four-day event. So then we went off to Reno for our Congress. It was in the back of it, huge success. We had 150 delegates from all over the world. Our 54 countries took part. So really, it's a case of when we take our events to our congresses, we've always got sort of a double-edged sword. And now, with our congresses, we try and take them to, I mean, Vegas was fantastic, really great. And I'm sure, I know Lars Lundvik from Sport Event Denmark said to me today, we're taking our flagship event to Las Vegas in 2018. This is all because of what happened in the run-up to it. So back to Glasgow, if I can. Glasgow hosted smaller events for us. Because they hosted smaller events, we gave them the chance of hosting four events. Am I talking too much? Okay. And then you won't hear from me again, hopefully. And also, for instance, we had our event this year, in our congress this year in Serbia, in Belgrade. Now, Belgrade, Serbia, is not one of our bigger curling nations, but we tried to take our congresses to places where they could not host a big event, you know, a big championship. So we took our event there, absolutely first class. So with a view to this now, and speaking to all the stakeholders in Serbia, meeting politicians, etc., we will now take an event. So that's kind of how we try and work it. We think of development as well as taking, obviously, our curling championships to iconic places. Is that okay?
Great. No, thanks, Kate. And actually, if I may ask Peter a similar question in terms of how you choose cities to host your events. But I think before you do that, it's probably worth letting the audience know a little bit more about Euroscience and what the body does.
Yeah, thank you very much. If you, as a city, want to be the European City of Science, you have to organize Euroscience Open Forum ESOF, because that's a title we grant to the city which organizes our event. Let me explain this a bit. Euroscience is the European Organization of Grassroots Scientists. So we have members across disciplines, across countries, across the public-private divide, and in that respect we are similar to the American Association for the Advancement of Science and our Chinese, Indian, Japanese, Brazilian counterparts with whom we cooperate. One of the key events we are organizing every 2 years is this ESOF, Euroscience Open Forum, and it's very different from a normal science conference. It is not for one discipline, it's for scientists of all disciplines, students come there, but it's really a sort of meeting place. It's where science meets science, where science meets policy, where science meets business, where science meets the public at large. And where science meets the media, not to forget about that. We are really having four tracks in this conference. It's something like 4,500 to 5,000 people who are attending. There is a science program. There is a science to business program where we are reaching out to business. There's this career program for young scientists where they get advice from people from industry, from universities, etc. And there is, not in the last place, a Science in the City program where we are reaching out to the public at large in the city which in which we are organizing ESOF. And that is a major event. Last year's event was in Copenhagen, in the old Carlsberg Brewery, a very fantastic place and very different from normal conference buildings. There was the Science in the City program, and that attracted 40,000 people from Copenhagen to just meet science, science in action, science films, science experiments, etc. The media part is a very important part, and it's a very important aspect for the cities as well, because we attract in our conferences some 400 to 500 people from the media, journalists, communicators, etc. And for them, it's really the place to come and see famous scientists. We have always Nobel Prize winners, businessmen, policymakers, and it really has become the largest general science conference in Europe, and it attracts a huge amount of interest from politicians, for example. Last year's conference was opened by Barroso, the then president of the commission. There are ministers, there are high businessmen, etc., involved, because of this nature of it being a meeting place where people are not just listening, but they are discussing. It's a very lively event, and I will have, I think, a later opportunity to say more about this science, European Science, City of Science, because that is really now extending the scope and the impact of the conference beyond the 4 or 5 days of the actual conference.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. We'll come back and explore that in a minute. But if first I can move on to Roberto. And In the intro, I mentioned you had worked on the World Expo. That is a well-known sort of business and trade event. It's just taken place in Milan this year. Going to Dubai in 2020 is a really, really big mega event, albeit not in sport. So from a business perspective, would you tell the audience a little bit about the Expo and how perhaps the benefits from hosting an Expo might differ from an Olympic Games, knowing that you obviously worked on Turin 2006 as well?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chris. The Expo is certainly one major tool of public diplomacy, which is adding up, or has added up in the recent years, a business development component which is becoming more and more important. Because the Expo, as you might know, is divided into two categories. The Universal Expos are like those that took place in 2010 in Shanghai, 2015 in Milan this year, and in 2020 we'll go to Dubai. Next year, there will be the bid will open again for the 2025 edition. Then you have an International Expo, which is smaller in size and smaller in length, in the duration, only 3 months instead of six, which normally takes place in between the two major expos. The 2017 is going to be in Astana, and once again next year the bid will open for the 2022 new edition. Is an expo, as the name says, is an exhibition that every country normally organizes and participates into regarding a major theme, a theme which must be a universal theme, which so with major issue, a major issue for humanity and mankind. And in Milano, linked to the 2015, which was the Millennium Campaign and the Millennium Goals deadline, we selected from the very beginning the idea of dedicating it to food safety and food security, so feeding the planet, energy for life, trying to mean that the real energy for the mankind was first of all food and nutrition and access to good and healthy food and clean water. As I said, it's normally an exhibition where every country can come. Normally they build either standalone pavilions where they showcase what are the innovation, the tradition as well of regarding the theme coming from their countries. But there are also minor or developing countries participating as well into cluster areas, in the case of Milan. And as I said, there is a major component linked to business development, because as you can imagine, every country participating is organizing a national day during the 6 months, so bringing very high-level delegation with head of state, heads of government, and a lot of business delegations. So Milan has probably innovated a bit with respect to Shanghai, and Dubai is going far beyond by building up a business development platform, really a platform that was bringing together all the different entrepreneurs in Italy and in other countries as well, wanting to make business and wanting also to find other cooperation opportunities with the incoming delegations during the 6 months. We have just finished on October 31st, so the data are still ongoing to be processed, but I mean the results are quite amazing. 21.5 million visitors, 130 participating countries plus international organization, a countless number of business and political meeting, and what is most important also in terms of legacy, a sort of Milan charter that has been delivered to President Ban Ki-moon, so the Secretary General of the United Nations, in order to launch a new process for the Millennium Campaign with new ambitious goals up to 2030. The difference, and I close my first part of intervention with the Olympic Games that I had the honor to work in Torino as Authority Relations Managing Director, are striking. But in the same, in the other hand, a major event is a terrific opportunity for a city, and not necessarily a metropolis, but also there are events that are at the size of any kind of city to showcase, to reposition itself on the map, or to relaunch a new vision of development for the future. And so that's basically what Milan is trying to invest on, really on sustainability, nutrition, and that's the kind of legacy also that will be brought by the Expo, hopefully, in the coming years.
Thanks, Roberto. And if I could turn now from the Expo and turn it over to Gerard, who's, through his company, he's an event operator. And one of the things I mentioned in my intro is this emerging trend for events to move to new markets. So I pulled off a bit of research that in 2013, the top international meeting countries included the USA at number one, Germany, Spain, France, UK, Italy, some of those traditional European countries, 2 through 6, and then Japan, China, Brazil, and back to the Netherlands and Europe, bringing up that top 10. Do you want to just also provide your views on some of the anecdotal or other evidence you have for these business events moving to new emerging markets, and indeed following the trend for many sporting events going to emerging markets?
Chris, I can relate to that. We are Royal Dutch Yarbers is a venue almost 100 years put up as a foundation to promote Dutch industries during the First World War, when the Netherlands were neutral. We were looking for business opportunities. So we are a large venue. We host exhibitions, we host parties, we host congresses, we host many meeting possibilities, but we're also an organizer ourselves. We organize B2C large events catering for the national market, and also B2B events. And in that B2B segment, we have seen a movement towards emerging markets and have been able to export trade shows mainly towards Asia as of, I would say, the beginnings of the 90s, with the real growth coming up probably the beginning of this century, and then specifically in the agricultural industry where we are active. We've seen emerging markets taking up a big part of the trade show business over there, and I'm sure cities like Shanghai, Beijing, Bangkok, they would probably be in the top 20, maybe top 10 by now when it comes to hosting B2B events. I see that happening a lot in the exhibition industry.
Yeah, and if I could just stay with that point just for a moment, if you look at a lot of the cities who have hosted the mega sport events over the past years, they're very clear about their event strategy and what events they want to host. In many cases, leading through, if you took from the case of say Beijing in 2008, an emerging market who really wanted to use hosting the events as a catalyst for destination marketing and promoting China, frankly, on the world stage. Do you think that you're now seeing cities and or indeed countries using business events in that same way to, if you like, put themselves on the map and promote themselves in a similar way?
Yes, I think that's happening as well when it comes to B2B events, especially cities who are able to align the different stakeholders in a certain industry or certain sector to become part of the trade show, and by that also promote the city not only as a fun destination or a business destination to go to, but a city which is related to that particular industry and which is also has an economic policy development aimed to that industry. So that's certainly something which is happening. And the reversed way I'm also seeing in the city I represent, which is Utrecht in the middle of Holland, maybe a second or a third tier city. And we were hosting a large sport event last summer, the Grand Départ, the start of the Tour de France. And that not only generated a very tight relations between the stakeholders, as ourselves, as the city of Utrecht and everybody involved, but also a lot of new interest in our city and therefore also our venue for international activities to take place. So look at it in both ways.
Sure, yeah. And if I can now move from Utrecht to possibly to Manchester, and Peter, you mentioned how Manchester has taken up this brand of the city of science. Can you share with us a little bit more about how this brand has come about and how you use that branding as a key selling point when you take your congresses, your conventions to other cities?
Well, the brand has come about basically already from the beginning. We had our first conference, EASE-OFF, in 2004. But at the time, there were some tensions with the European Commission, and so we decided not yet to use the brand. But since a couple of years, we are just doing it, and cities like it, and the Commission likes it as well. So that's fine. Now, Manchester is going to be the city where the next conference in 2016 takes place. And it illustrates very nicely the power of this European City of Science brand, because what Manchester has done is jump on it. And they have used that as the sort of overarching concept for positioning Manchester in a modern way as a new city of science, innovation, and industry. And the title, the subtitle of the conference next year illustrates that again. It is From Cottonopolis to Graphene City. Cottonopolis, as you might know, was the name by which Manchester was known in the 19th century, the middle point of Earth as far as cotton is concerned, the cotton industry. Now it's going to be graphene, which stands for all sort of modern materials, modern industry. And so Manchester is using the concept science, European City of Science, for the whole year to again bring together, make a cohesion between all sorts of events. Business events, science events, outreach to the city citizens on things to do with science and innovation. And so they are making a big fuss about it in their city marketing to just push this idea of the new Manchester, the city of science and industry and innovation. And the same is going to happen in Toulouse. We are moving to Toulouse in 2018, and with Airbus in the lead, they have already gathered a huge commitment from the industry community to just do the same for Toulouse as Manchester is doing now for itself.
Now, thanks, Peter. And it's very interesting to hear of examples of cities that are using non-sport events like that. And of course, the city we're in here, Glasgow, has long since had a very, very focused, robust strategy for bringing sport events. And I wondered, Kate, if I could ask from the perspective of a federation and from a strategic perspective, whether you have an event hosting strategy of where you want to take your annual congresses, and how that fits with the broader goals of you as a federation.
I think I said something about that earlier, but I'll see, again, one thing I want to follow up on something that one of the earlier speakers said about sporting events, how they can, sorry, I'm back to sport again, how they can in a country that's already hosted something, how it can be expanded. For instance, Sochi this past year. I was back there recently, and in Sochi, I hope you all watched it or were there. Some of you were there. But they now have, I had lunch with the mayor of Sochi, and they have now, their population has increased by some 60,000 people. Our venue in Sochi is open 24/7, so huge things have happened there. And come Christmas time, last Christmas, there wasn't a bed to be had in Sochi. Interesting. Formula One, I think you'd watched that recently, that took place there. And I have to tell you, when I had lunch with the mayor, I said, I could hear the cars zzz around, and I said, oh, I always wanted to do that. Oh, I should have put a big zip, because I did it. And it was fantastic. I did have a driver. I wasn't on my own. But no, I think cities that host events open the door to anything, sporting events to the future. Next week, we will be in Esbjerg in Denmark, and our lovely Crown Prince Frederick, who's an IOC member, is opening the event. Many, many events have happened because of this. But when we take them to small places, as I said, Tallinn this past year, we were in Estonia, and because of the result of us hosting our World Junior Championships there, doors have opened. Other events are going there, not just sporting events. And people, because of the doors being opened to people, I think it just means that these small countries, these small places can now ask, bid for other events. And our Congress, we will be taking a Congress there in the future. So I think that's just part and parcel of its development as well as universality as well. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think one of the very interesting things from the discussions that took place this morning and compared to this afternoon is we were talking a lot this morning about Agenda 2020 and how the intent of that is to allow not necessarily only the biggest megacities their ability to host the Olympic Games. But then when you look at the huge diversity and portfolio of different events that cities can take on, whether it be in arts, culture, science, or otherwise, and all available for different cities of different sizes. And if I may now turn to you, Roberto, sort of continuing that theme, really. Do you think a city should create a strategy, really, to focus on both sports events and business and other types of events? Or do you think there might be more power for a city if you took somewhere like Doha to focus exclusively on sport?
Yeah, of course, an immediate reply could be depends, but not to skip your questions, I would opt for option one, really, because it's very important that a city develops its own strategy and its own vision. And for instance, Barcelona, we all take 1992 Olympic Games in Barcelona as a really transforming event for the city that continued later with, for instance, investing in culture, like the International Forum of Culture that was launched by Barcelona in 2004 and has now become a sort of format that every 3 years every city can apply to in order to host this kind of event. And same way, in a way, Torino, when Torino tried to bid, and in his strategic plan, the idea of bidding for the Olympic Games was there simply because Torino wanted to shake off the image of a one company town, you know, very much linked to the to Fiat and to car industry, and really to promote its cultural heritage that has nothing to less than many other beautiful Italian cities. And so the spotlight provided by the Olympic Games was just a kickoff point. 2 years later, Torino hosted, for instance, the World Design Capital and the World Congress of Architects, and then continued in this way in bidding in many, many other major events. This year is going to be again the European Capital of Sport, but Torino is investing a lot in arts and culture. And for instance, in 2011, the celebrations of the 150th anniversary of the foundation of Italy in 1861-2011 was another major opportunity to promote the cultural heritage of the city. So as you can see, there is a combination of different events that can be hosted, provided that it's very clear what is the strategy, what is the vision, and how these events can combine according to a sound cost-benefit analysis into a major opportunity and major advantage for the city itself.
Thanks, Roberto. And if I just pick up on one point you just made there in terms of the costs of hosting events and ask a question for Gerard. In terms of in the modern world, I guess, since the economic crisis hit several years back, cities and countries have increasingly faced tighter scrutiny on where they invest their money. And do you think business events perhaps offer a safer, a more reliable offer than sport events, say, for as a way of promoting cities and getting heads on beds and so forth?
Well, I'm not an expert on sport events, but the scale of it would seem to be a little bit more risky than to organize B2B events. B2B events, when it comes to exhibitions or congresses, they host typically between 5 and 25,000 people, so that is an acceptable scale. While the spending, of course, of business tourism in several cities is really recognized very well, and they have an active policy on getting MICE into their city, knowing that a business tourist spends about 7 times as much as a regular tourist. So I would say it's a pretty safe bet, probably compared to sport events, but it should, in my opinion, fit into the economical policy of a city or a region, because if it isn't, it's very difficult to align different stakeholders in that industry, and that makes a chance of success just smaller. And you want to be successful for everybody, for delegates, for sponsors, for exhibitors, and for the city.
Yeah,
answer your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the interesting points is you started your question saying, you know, you don't have that much experience of sport, but you've ended your question talking. You ended your answer talking about the necessity for all of the stakeholders to come together. And certainly, my experience of working at London 2012 for 8 years was one of the big aspects of the success of that event was precisely that the ability of the stakeholders to work together, the integration of all of the different partners on that event was one of the key reasons why it was successful. So I think there's that in itself is a good example of how the worlds of business and sport actually, from an event hosting standpoint, are quite similar. Well, look, we've got a few minutes now to turn it over to the floor. So if anyone has any questions, if they could raise their hands. One in the middle.
Hi, my name is Per. I'm from the Convention Bureau of the Norwegian city of Stavanger. I have a question to Mr. Daniel. You said you had very positive effects of the Turin Olympics with a number of scientific meetings and conferences after the event. Do you think it's going to be the same after the expo in Milan?
Very good questions. I do hope so. At the moment, the legacy on which they are trying to focus is really to make a sort of Milano Innovation New District mind, which is bringing there all the university with all the scientific faculties, including an incubators, to bring into it a startup, and the Italian Institute of Technology is developing also a project to bring into there a major scientific, scientific clusters to bring together all the major industries dealing with, in particular, with agri-food sectors. So I was very much interested when Peter Tindemans was speaking about ISOF, because that could be an event that really could be brought to Milan. And I think that Milan, thanks also to the activity of the Milan Fair, which has a sort of convention bureau, is really investing a lot into that. So probably we'll see the results in a couple of years. My expectation is, to answer your question, is yes.
Any other questions? Okay, well, whilst people are thinking for any other questions, I'm going to actually sort of roll the clock back to this morning's session where we talked about digital social media, certainly in the context of sport, and turn that over in terms of in the business world, how digital media, social media is used. And if I could perhaps just start with Peter, and from a neuroscience standpoint, how do you use some of these tools to engage the thousands of people that you mentioned come to your events?
Well, there are several ways. There are several ways in which we are now using social media, or are going to use social media. In the first place, we are building up the conference, as it were, through the social media. So we started as soon as the program is to be announced, which will be in probably 2 months' time. We will start social media sessions or with the speakers of the various sessions so that people can already share experiences before the conference. We certainly will use social media at the conference very much so. And indeed, we have even discussed the possibility we should perhaps turn Ease Off into a sort of permanent conference through the social media, so that in between the actual physical meetings, we will have ongoing discussions. We are using, for example, we have a web journal, The Euroscientist, which already partly serves that purpose, but that's the direction in which we think we could go. Just build up a community of people who keep exchanging views in between conferences and then come to the conference to just meet each other and have physical meetings.
Yeah, and if I could ask the same question for Gerard in terms of the conferences, B2B events and so forth that you organise. How has social and digital media transformed how you organise your events?
Well, the digital world has obviously been extremely disruptive for the exhibition industry, but that disruption already started, I would say, about 12, 13 years ago. So the role of exhibitions has fundamentally changed. It's not any longer a platform to compare products or prices. It's really become a relation marketing event. So that effect has taken place. We see a lot of new face-to-face events generated out of the digital world. So communities who get large enough, who have contact online, who want to meet offline, and for that they need a location. So we try always to be on top of that and to see what developments are when it comes to facilitating certain communities. And when it comes to B2B, we don't use that much social media, but what we do is we create online platforms where specific target groups can meet each other, talk about topics, share their expertise, and we do that to be able to create a community which is valuable for our customers, which are the exhibitors. Of course, when it comes to B2C events, there is no way you can do without social media, and we put a lot of efforts into that.
Great, thank you. I'm going to open it back out and just check if there are any other questions from the floor. Okay, well, just before I wrap up, I'm going to ask a final question. Again, coming back to the overall theme of the conference around innovation, and perhaps if I could start with you, Peter, in terms of looking to the future. You've talked about this new brand that you have introduced. What other innovations are either you involved in or do you see impacting your field in terms of the conference area?
Well, I think there is one thing very special, you may call it innovative, about our conference, which is very different from all sort of conferences, exhibitions, etc., etc. And that is a very strong commitment of the local, regional, and national science, business, and community, and the local and authorities. Because what we request from a city when we are putting out a call for tenders, we are requesting that a city, of course, has the possibility to be this European city of science, so it should not be somewhere in the backyards. But we are also requesting very strongly that we have a demonstrated commitment of the science community locally, regionally, nationally, and of the business community and of the authorities. And that works out very well. And it reflects itself in the business model, you might say. because in our case it's not so that a city pays for the conference. They give contributions, but it's a widely differing model from ESOF to ESOF. There are contributions from national governments sometimes. We always have a contribution, a significant one, from the European Commission, which we just give to the city. We have contributions from business sponsors, from private foundations, etc. And then, of course, there are the regional income from registration fees, etc. So in that sense, I think it has developed into a very innovative concept, which is considered by cities a very effective means of making their cities much more visible among top-level people all over the world, because we are closely cooperating, again, with people from all over the world.
Sure, thanks. And if I could pose a similar question to Roberto, just in terms of how you see innovation affecting the future trends within the business sector, or indeed based on your experience in sport too. Feel free to comment on either.
Innovation is going probably to transform, yeah, because innovation and technology is moving on at such a pace that it's very difficult to forecast what kind of technologies, for instance, will be available in 2024. Coming back to sport events, what does it mean in terms of the media, press, the broadcasters, and the way of using and benefiting from a major event. So these are kind of things, because I'm currently working also for Rome, which is bidding, just to witness how the interest is high for the Ryder Cup in 2022 and for the Olympic Games in 2024. So one of the things we are trying to figure out how innovation and technology can probably transform also the way of approaching the games for the spectators and for the different stakeholders, athletes, media, broadcasters, sponsors. I think it's going to have a transformative effect, and so far we have no idea really of what kind of technologies will be available, but certainly major events are a way really to bring the world to get and know these new innovation trends more often and more directly than in other cases.
Sure, and then I wondered if, Gerard, you had any closing comments around, from your business's perspective, about innovation and how that's going to further transform your sector.
First of all, if we're talking about disruptive innovations, you're more than welcome to our World Raid Congress in Utrecht in the Netherlands, which we organized together with the organizers of Host City here. The business is going to be transformed tremendously. We see that, but we see a lot of possibilities, like I just stated, coming out of the digital world for the face-to-face industry. So what exactly will happen, nobody knows, and I think that is the most important learning point in these disruptive times. We have to be adaptable all the time. And for big venues like ours, that's really a challenge, because if we invest a lot of money, we know that our return on investment, the time is much, much shorter than it used to be. So those are really difficult policy decisions to make at board level.
Sure, yeah. And then if I may, Kate, as well, it's a similar question in terms of innovation and how that impacts your federation, not just necessarily in terms of from an events perspective and where you host your congresses, but more generally for your federation.
I am on the IOC Programmes Commission. I said that earlier on, and it's a very rigorous to become an Olympic sport, or to stay as an Olympic sport, you have to go through a really rigorous progress. But it's attracting the young. And this is back to digital and everything now. We're looking at the young people. We have to really engage them and attract them to sport, full stop. And Olympic Channel, of course, I'm sure you heard about that when someone was speaking about Agenda 2020. This should be happening next year. So within sport, we have to really move with the times. I mean, I am not technologically minded as young people within our federation, but we have to move forward. We have to keep moving, otherwise we're going to be left behind in all aspects of life, be it sport, be it going to congresses to develop a smaller country into attracting bigger businesses, etc. But I think our focus has to be on the young and has to be on technology for the future.
Great, thanks, Kate. I think we've just got one final question from Ben, and then we're going to wrap up the session.
Hi. How would you define, and this is a question for any of the panelists really, or each of them if we have time, how would you define the role of host city conference as a strategic influencer, and how would you like to see the conference develop?
Good one. Do you want to go first, Kate? Yeah, go on, you go, Kate.
The question, Ben, sorry, is how... Well, I have to say, I'm sorry, I only arrived at lunchtime, so I don't have. I only stayed at one small event earlier on. But I have to say, for me, it's great. I mean, you're all new people to me. I don't know any of you people apart from the few that host our events, which is great for us. So please make contact. I mean, this is surely what it's all about. Communication has to be, and I don't think anyone should ever be shy about hosting for anything. In sport, in particular, obviously, is where I come from. But never, ever be shy. When I look at all the impact, the economic impact we have had in so many different cities, Dumfries, a small country, a small town in Scotland, big event, £1 million. Maybe not a lot, but this is a small community. But I think you have to think, never be shy for hosting. And I think the Las Vegas model, for me, is just outstanding to think what happened just because of a chance event at the Youth Olympic Games. I think this is what it's all about. So it has to be communication, and I would love to come back and sit and listen to some more. But I'm in Lausanne tomorrow, so I'm off as soon as this is finished. But I really enjoyed. Thank you for asking me. It's been very enlightening and entertaining.
In one of the sessions this morning, which I witnessed, someone remarked that there is a large increase in the number of events which are being organized, whether it's in sports or in other areas. And that certainly is true, and it's not just the number, but it's also the variety of events. And given that fact, I think it's very useful to have a meeting where people can just hear what's all taking place and then see, is this something for my city or for my region, should I perhaps move in that direction? And the second thing which I want to reiterate is, again, taking Manchester as an example, it's important, I think, that cities or regions develop a certain concept, under a certain banner under which they would like to promote themselves. And that's what you see happening. And that is very useful now. And again, that's something to exchange with other people.
Coming to me, I think it's very important conference. I'm not saying that just because you invited me, because I'm very honored to be here, but simply because sometimes taking some time for reflection, for liaising, from learning from other cities' experience is really something that you bring back home, you start digesting little by little, and then it makes you come out with new ideas that have, once again, to fit with your long-term strategy and your vision for the city and for the country. But it's really gathering these kind of things that you get to know what other cities previously has done in terms of experience. So to me, is really encouraging.
I would always encourage meetings like this. Obviously, also being a facilitator of meetings, I see two. Two very important functions on it. First of all, of course, it's the content, so the learning experience here. And second, and maybe even more important, is the possibility to network together in a more informal environment, and that networking with peers and colleagues and sharing information, exchanging knowledge. I think that is the best opportunity you have during this type of congresses. So. I'm back next year.
Well, I think it's nice to end on some positive comments for the power of collaboration and communication through both this panel and the broader conference. But it just leaves me, before I hand back to Ben for the next panel, to thank this panel very much, to Kate, Peter, Roberto and Gerard for a really interesting discussion. So thank you very much.